Welcome to the Generous Business Owner Podcast, where business owners gain inspiration and encouragement to live a legacy, not just leave one. And now your hosts, Jeff Thomas, Alan Barnhart, and Jeff Rutt.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's Generous Business Owner Podcast. My name is Jeff Thomas, and I've got one of our co-hosts, Jeff Rutt, with us. Say hello to the people, Jeff.
Hey, people.
And we have Don Wenner with us today. Don is the founder and CEO of DLP Capital, a private real estate investment and financial services firm focused on building thriving communities. He's involved in all kinds of stuff. There's no way we're going to get to his whole life today, but we're going to get started. So, Don, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Jeff and Jeff. Excited to be here.
Jeff and Jeff. That's the Jeff and Jeff show. So, Jeff Rutt, I'll let you start asking the question.
Yeah. Don, so good to have you here. And we definitely won't be able to get through everything on one episode, but start us off a little bit. Give us a little bit of background on your childhood, your maybe the early years, your spiritual formation, and so forth.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. So grew up not too far from you in Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania. Kind of moved all around. I lived in 37 homes in Lehigh Valley area by the time I was 17.
So,
moved around the valley, but all pretty much in Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania. So, hour north of Philadelphia, home of Bethlehem Steel. Used to be probably most known for today, maybe most known for Lehigh University. Grew up to two young parents. They had me at 16 years old, and I'm the oldest of ultimately five. And parents had about as much resources as you would expect for two 16-year-olds. And so my mom ran a home daycare through much of my childhood. So I was oldest of five with always five or six other little kids in my house every day from sunup to sundown. And then my parents got divorced when I was about 4 years old. And my dad was a correction officer most of my childhood. So I think his top year as a correction officer, he made about $40,000 a year. So, but you know, they raised me in the church, raised me in faith. My mom specifically, and I went to Catholic school off and on through my childhood, and always grew up with a confidence and a knowledge that my parents loved me and cared about me, and as did the Lord, and never. Had any doubts, very, very blessed about that. And I don't know, you know, exactly, you know, as a father today of three boys, which I can get into then, you know, I've thought a lot about this, worked a lot about this. I don't know exactly what or why or how, you know, I was, you know, formed the way I was in the respect of, I had just a burning level of kind of discipline and focus and energy and drive and entrepreneurship pretty much from the beginning. And my dad told the story at my wedding when he knew I was going to be an entrepreneur, which was in kindergarten when I was caught selling Hostess donuts, those little black Hostess donuts to my classmates every day. And he said that's when he knew I was going to be an entrepreneur. And that continued through elementary of selling things to running a business in middle school and employing friends to then moving out of my parents' house as a 17-year-old, a junior in high school, and saying, I can do this on my own. And I'm not listening to anybody anymore, and I'm going to go make my own path. And that led me into real estate soon after, which I can certainly get into. But those are the formative years. I have a sister who's 2 years younger, a sister who's 7 years younger, a brother who's 9 years younger, an adopted sister who's 22 years younger. I'm 39 today.
Awesome. Wait, today?
No, not today.
Okay. Yeah.
I am 39.
Yeah. You know, today. It's really, thank you for sharing that. It's very, very insightful. Love to spend more time on the, maybe just a brief, tell us briefly what it was like to live in 37 different homes. And then I can tell you that there's a very consistent theme of our guests on this podcast that it seems like all of them were busted at some point for some kind of illegal business in either elementary or junior high school, but including yours truly. But yeah, I would love to hear, yeah, what was that like? 37, I thought I moved around a lot when I was a kid.
You know, in hindsight, you know, it was incredibly, you know, formative, and it's a big part. And it didn't even hit me, to be honest, until probably about 10 years into my career, why I was so passionate around, you know, as we call it, building thriving communities, and why I was so focused around building a community where people had deep connection and relationship with the Lord, a deep connection and relationship with each other, where we own rental communities where we want to average 10-year plus average occupancies versus industry average in apartment communities of about 16 or 17 months. It didn't even hit me until later in life why I was drawn to that and why I was so passionate about it. And I started seeing just so many of the challenges as an adult that come from people moving all the time, starting with the financial challenges. But the other big factor that I really have focused a lot on is education. And there's all these amazing, maybe not the right word, but hard to believe, just so incredible stats around there of how critical education is, and specifically how critical reading is. And so there's all this data out there around third grade literacy scores and how that's such a predictor into for your future success, right? So you're 63 times as likely to end up in prison if you don't graduate high school than if you graduate college, right? Which that might not sound that surprising, but it's a pretty big stat. Another big stat is, if you fall behind reading in third grade literacy, if you're behind the age level reading, you're, you get the exact number, 28 or 29 times as likely to not graduate high school. So it just starts to, when you fall behind in reading, you start falling behind then in school and so forth, things that probably most of us know. It's such a big stat that there's counties around America that size their prisons based on the third grade literacy scores, because they know if a high percentage of children aren't able to read at that level, the prisons are going to be more populated in, 15 years or whatnot, right?
Wow.
And so I think about that. I think, well, if you're changing schools and support systems, and I always think of the concept, it takes a village to raise a child, right? That, not the concept, but the fact. And, you're changing your support system, going through constant moving and turbulence, it's going to increase the probability of falling behind as a young child, right? And so I was, extremely blessed as in many ways, Lord's blessed me. And one of them was with school, where I never had any challenges, even through moving 37 times, I had great grades, great grade scores, et cetera. And that helped me to get a full ride into college and whatnot. So so for me, it wasn't that kind of challenge, but seeing how it affected, my siblings, how it affected, my family, was significant. But on the positive side, everything happens for a reason, right? The Lord doesn't give us anything we can't handle. And so, it formed not only, what business I'm in and the impact we're making today, but it also formed my ability and to handle change. And we're in, a very fast paced environment with constant change, right? That's not gonna slow down. The world's not slowing down. The pace of change and newness and challenges that we face in business and life are gonna grow. So for me, it helped build that comfort in change, that comfort in uncertainty, that comfort in not knowing, what's around the corner, but being confident in who I am, confident in those who love me, confident in my relationship with the Lord, that I knew, the short-term situations, are just that.
So two more things, and then I want to get into how you met your lovely wife and, what next phases, but talk about sports and I know you're really into coaching sports with your kids. Talk about that and your experience growing up as a kid, but then also talk about how your philanthropic views, your mindset, your generosity mindset was formed initially. How were the foundations of that formed as a kid? And maybe how are you using some of those mindsets and formations to pass on to your kids? I know those are kind of different questions there, but yeah.
Those are some big questions. I'll try to tackle them there in that kind of order. So in terms of, I think the first question was about sports. So, you asked the question before around how did moving, affect things for me. And so, my parents being super young, moving a lot, struggling just to make ends meet, sports weren't a priority because they didn't have time to take me to sports or think about them. So I never played an actual school team sport until fifth grade. Mm. And then, again, I was very blessed that I just happened to be, really fast. So I owned lots of different records in school and such for different things, just because I was fast, and that benefits you in a lot of different sports. And so, love basketball. Did track. And then, but then I started, you know, working full time pretty much in eighth grade. So by ninth grade, I was pretty much, you know, working full time. And ninth grade was the last year I did sports. And then I moved out of my parents' house to the junior in high school. And but stayed, you know, playing, you know, for fun, and especially basketball was my main hobby. And so, you know, I was determined when I had my children that, you know, that I wasn't going to put them in that situation. I did always feel like, man, by the time I started, I think kids have been playing it for years already. I didn't have, they had a big disadvantage. And I do think sports can be really formative for children. So when my first two sons who are 13 months apart were born, you know, I was adamant I was going to give them all those opportunities and also give them exposure to learn and experience lots of different things. So we've tried just about every sport under the sun. And so like right now I'm coaching two flag football teams, which both our championship games are this Saturday.
All right.
Yeah. So we're pretty excited about that. We have martial arts going for one of my sons right now. We have track and field going. We have violin, and we have, what else do we have? We have basketball. Two basketball teams, because we have a middle school basketball team and a club basketball team right now. So that's just for my two older sons, all those activities and sports. And I've coached basketball, soccer, although I know nothing about soccer. We've done lacrosse, we've done swimming, we've done tennis, we do pickleball. So, you know, a lot of exposure, and we virtually school our kids as well. So sports is a big, important part from a social standpoint as well. But it's been a great, great joy, and the bonding that you get to have with your children through doing sports and being out there on the field together coaching has been an incredible, incredible joy.
Yeah.
So I know there was another follow-up question.
Yeah, so what about, how are some of your philanthropic theories and beliefs formed at a young age?
So, you know, I grew up in mentioned the Catholic Church, and so certainly tithing was, a normal expected course of life. But other than that, my parents always had the mindset of, life is about saving pennies, not making dollars.
Mm.
And so everything was always very much centered around, we don't have the money for this. And that included philanthropy. So, when you're making $25,000 a year, $40,000 a year, my parents behaved like most people earning that kind of money, which is, I'm just trying to keep the lights on and pay my mortgage. I'm not thinking about supporting others. And so, so giving or philanthropy in both money or service really wasn't a real part of my childhood. Wasn't something that was front and center. We really focused on, when you're in that environment, a lot of your family, extended family, is in similar environments and frankly worse. So there's a lot around supporting your family and time and resources, and when they're when aunts and are going through divorces and separations, they're coming and living with us, and their kids are living with us, and you're feeding them and all that kind of stuff. But in terms of serving people outside our family, wasn't really a focus. So for me, though, I got into business at 20 years old. Well, I got into real estate business at 20 years old, while I was still in college at Drexel, and it took off really, really fast. And I was very blessed that, by really my mid 20s, I had already achieved, financial independence. And by, 30, I had, achieved, I'll call it generational, wealth. And so, it happened in a pretty short amount of time. So for me, it was just, very, very natural. I know I live my life by, too much has been given, much will be required, Luke 12:48. And I believe that. I believe my role in the success I've had is, this big. And when you know that, it's his, not ours, right? It's pretty easy, right? So, and what I've tried to do, and I've spent a lot of significant time, a lot of effort really trying to determine how do I make as big of an impact as possible. Not just with, financial giving, but with the leverage of my, God-given talents, abilities, resources, relationships, the platform I have to really make a big kingdom impact as possible. So I spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to best do that, how to leverage the stage I have and the relationships I have and to do that. And so for a lot of our philanthropy, it centers around our purpose. So we set up, so I did the process that a lot of people do. So I kind of skipped this detail. So when all of a sudden I realized, hey, I've got some wealth and I need to really start, intentionally making a difference, I did what a lot of people do. And I went and I set up a foundation and And I started, you know, giving, you know, some of my, you know, money and also some of my time, you know, to philanthropy. And it hit me one day. So when we hit 400 employees at DLP, you know, that was maybe 6 or 7 years ago. All of a sudden one day it hit me that I had people working 1 million hours, a year under my direction. Right. And I thought, wow, so I have people working 1 million hours of people's time. I have the ability to direct, yet I'm only giving a small amount of our resources, small amount of our time to quote unquote do good. Right. And that's when I really realized, you know, I want to do good with all of our resources. You know, at the time we were doing hundreds of millions of revenue and we had, you know, billions of dollars of assets. Why are we not doing good with all of it, right? Then we started reframing our thinking around philanthropy and we started saying, that's where we went and we self-mandated ourselves to be an impact company, an impact investment fund, and started getting really clear around how do we make an impact through what we do for profit. And at the center of that, building a thriving community is anchored in safe, attainable housing. So that's the anchor of what we do at DLP, but that's not the end point, right? Having a safe, affordable place to live is the starting point of being in a thriving community, not the end point. And so we look at that as the starting point. You hear the saying that, hey, the church, you know, the pastor at your church has you for an hour or two every week, right? You're as a business leader, right? You have your employees for 40 hours a week or 50 hours a week, right? But in our rental communities, we have people 7 days a week, you know, 24 hours a day or, you know, however many hours they're not, you know, quote unquote at work, right? We have this incredible opportunity of ministry within our rental communities. And this is a crazy stat, but 94% of people who live in rental communities in America today are unchurched. 94%. So think about that. On your way to church every week, you're driving past thousands and thousands of people who need to be saved. Yet we go to church to think about what third world country we need to go to save people. And I'm a big fan of that. I'm going to three back-to-back-to-back mission trips starting on Sunday in other countries. So I'm not knocking that at all. But I'm just saying there's so much need, you know, right here. And we get the benefit of these people live in our communities. We have 100,000 of them today. How do we help them be a part of a thriving community? Which simply put, you know, that it starts with, you know, relationship with the Lord and discipleship and relationship with your neighbors and connection to others. And so that's what we've really built our business around doing. And in a lot of ways we measure that and track that. And then our giving that we do alongside the business is funded from the business. So we give 25% of our profits to our foundation. And, you know, so we're serving those that we can't serve, or at least we haven't figured out how to serve in our for-profit business through our nonprofits. It's the same purpose to transform lives, the building of thriving communities. That's our purpose at DLP. It's also our purpose in our foundation, but we're able to do it in different ways and to people we can't help in our business. And that it often means serving the, you know, the poorest of the poor, you know. And so some of our goals right now in our giving are to eradicate homelessness in St. Augustine, Florida, where I live. And there's a whole lot of stuff we're doing around that. I'll be flying to two different ministries in other parts of Florida doing some amazing things on Friday. We're taking the approach of bringing together all the great organizations in our local community together to make a difference. That doesn't happen almost in any market around the country. The organizations actually work together, but then taking the best practices from those around the country and bringing these people together and learning from each other. And that doesn't happen largely either. So that's a lot of what we're doing on a very local level. Then the ministry we're doing across all the rental communities we own around the country. And then, you know, doing a lot of interesting things in called third world countries where you can get the most scalable impact. And there's the biggest need, as you know, all too well. Mm-hmm. A lot of ways we're working on that. So that was a long answer to your question, but those are some of the things we're doing.
Yeah. So Jeff, I just want to stay on this for one more minute. So Don, talk a little bit about your kids and how you're passing on that next, you know, that next generation, the faithful generosity part.
Yeah. So, you know, my kids today are 12 as of tomorrow, 10 and 2, 3 boys. And
happy birthday.
Thank you. Leap day, baby. So we've been, you know, really, I think like everything in life, you know, it starts with intention. And so, you know, I've kind of done this talk around the, you know, 6 key commitments or choices, you know, to live fully. And it's, you know, intentionality, purpose, goals, grit, a growth mindset, and presence, being present. And so I've really spent a lot of time on those six areas, developing those commitments and disciplines with my children, and being really clear. My wife and I, Carla and I, be really clear with our boys around what do we value, and what do we value as a family? What do we value and expect from them, and trying to shape their heart as young boys. And I think, the simplest parts of that are being intentional and asking yourself and knowing for yourself, what are our family values, right? What do we value? What do we want to instill into our children, and why, and then how, and then be committed to it and communicate about it and talk about it and show it and live it and do it. And, I call it prepared to win is what a lot of people struggle with. There's a quote that says, most people have the will to win, but few have the will to prepare to win. And that's the kind of concept of intentionality, is we all want our children to thrive and be successful and happy and healthy. But there's not many that out there that actually spend intentional time deciding what that means and how they're going to do it. And so for us, it just comes down to really simple, a lot of times there's really simple rhythms around how do we communicate? How do we spend time together? How do we make sure we're instilling these values? And we've got a lot of simple rhythms we do around that. But maybe my favorite one that kind of pulls a lot of it together is we have a big, hairy, audacious goal as a family. Jim Collins termed, have 1,000 extraordinary days in 100 different places. And an extraordinary day is the day where we all vote that it was an extraordinary day. Every person has to agree it was an extraordinary day. And so that intentional focus around all of us wanting to have great days together has been really, really powerful. But, we have a family crest, we have family values, we have a family mission. Our family values spell out be a light, and our kids know them. We talk about them regularly. We review them, which are to be present, to be authentic, to live fully, to have impact. Honor God, grit and growth, and tribe are what spells out be a light. And we spend a lot of time talking about what do those things mean and doing lessons around them and then creating exposure opportunities to live them out. And I'll tell you, in 15, 20 years, if it worked. But that's, those are the things that we're working intently on.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's incredibly important at this stage to build that foundation and really be talking about it. And that is a BHAG. That's a big, hairy, audacious goal. Well, I love
that word intentionality. I just think that's the word that comes to mind when you're talking about this. You're clearly, God just made you intentional. People will see the bio. Even your bio is intentional. So everybody check that out in the show notes. But I think that's kind of a gift that you've been given. But, you did a nice job of unpacking, maybe kind of what you're doing with the family and with the foundation. But when you're building these communities, what are some of the things that you're doing with your employees and with the tenants or the residents of these communities that you own?
Yeah. So, our business model around building thriving communities, as I said, centers around safe, attainable housing. So, the starting point is we have to be able to build housing that's attainable, which is a challenge as anybody in development and construction.
That's true.
And so there's a lot of elements around that, how we build the most efficient product. But then it's really about being intentional around what do we build and how do we create community? To create community, there needs to be community gathering spaces. There has to be, we believe, green space and place to connect and activities to connect, like pickleball and such. So having amenities and space to attract people to be able to congregate and build relationships is really important. But then the real work, so when I say that, safe, attainable housing, well, safety is certainly, you want to be in a place where there's not a lot of crime and security and those types of things, but real safety comes from relationship, right? And when you have relationships with your neighbors and you know each other and you watch out for each other, that's what gives the real feeling of safety and security. And so we try to really build deep relationships. So we have on-site team members dedicated to building community, dedicated to running lots of activities and get-togethers and running church services and Bible studies and creating discipleship and helping people to do life together, right? Where if you look at most rental communities, if you have an emergency, I had to take one of my sons on Friday night to the emergency room. Everything turned out to be fine, but he it hurt his elbow dunking a basketball, one of those back of the door basketball hoops. He was in extreme pain. So I was in the hospital with him at, you know, 11 o'clock at night on Friday night. And, you know, I just think about, you know, I was in an apartment community and, you know, I'm a single parent or my wife wasn't home or whatnot. Who would have stayed with the 2-year-old if I had to go run and do that as an example? And in rental communities, a lot of times you don't have that level of relationship where you got an emergency, you got to take off. Who's going to watch your kids, right? Or your dog, right? And to have that level that you can knock on your neighbor's door and know they've got your back and they're going to be there for you and they're going to help you. And so there's a lot of thoughtfulness to how we create relationship and how we, you know, help the lost to be found. And there, we don't hide that that's our goal. Certainly we love all people. We want all backgrounds and beliefs, to come live and together, but we want to help the lost to be found. We think building a connection with the Lord and then secondarily a connection with each other, you know, are really at the center points of a thriving community. And there's lots of different things we do. Like, and we can come in there as the big owner of the community, the wealthy, you know, people who own it, right? And solve people's problems. And we do those things. We grant what we call dream on. So if somebody's got an emergency, somebody's got cancer or got problems, we'll come in there and grant dreams. We'll go pay medical bills. We'll pay for people to go to college. We'll pay for down payments on homes. We do all those types of things all the time, and which is really cool and great to be able to do. And but what's even more important is when the residents support each other, right? When one of our residents has cancer and the other people in the community are coming and serving and helping out with their kids or bringing food when the person can't, you know, get around, right? When they're supporting each other, when there's that level, hey, there's people who got my back, we're going to be there for me, people who are going to do life with me. Those are the really important things. So for us, some of the things we really focus on is having 10-year average occupancies of our residents for 16, 17 months, right? It has so many ripple effects when people stay and live together for long periods of time.
I mean, I think we had a guest on who's in a similar business. But I think they're in the kind of the upper income level of residential living, and he was talking about being drawn kind of to this you know, the lower income level where you are, and he talked about it being a real margin challenge. Like, you know, he said I kind of had to take a bigger piece of this than my partners because it wasn't as profitable. How do you deal with that challenge? Or do you see it that way?
Yeah. So, you know, when people think about impact investing or they think about, you know, doing good, it's generally thought to be that means you got to give up some of the economic, some of the profits to do good, right? And usually when you think about making an impact, that's what you're doing. Say, I'm gonna give up some benefit to me, some returns or whatnot to do more for others. And that's a great thing to do, right? I don't, you know, that's something we should all commend. But the real challenge is how do you go about generating better returns while doing good for the residents, right? How do I make it where it's a win for our employees, which that part is fairly easy, right? Because your employees want to be a part of a company serving others, making a difference, right? That's going to help me attract the very best people, keep them, et cetera. So I want my residents to be there 10 years. I need my staff to be there 10 years too. But also be a win for our investors, you know, people. How we've had our success and how we've made the money we've made and build the business we build is because we've generated really great returns for investors, right? That's really important to our investors, right? But also, you know, do great for our residents. And that's hard, right? But man, is it more rewarding, right? When you can go about creating a situation where you can create a win for everybody involved versus somebody has to sacrifice for somebody else to benefit, that's harder. But the formulas involve, well, if I have people there much longer, I'm going to have lower turnover costs. I'm going to have lower maintenance costs. I'm going to have less delinquency. I'm going to have less costs for leasing. I'm going to have better reviews, which is going to help me attract better residents. And it's a different way of operating that we believe generates higher overall returns, especially when you look at it over the long haul. But it's a different model, right? And apartment communities, people move every 16, 17 months because that's the business model. People go and they re-renovate apartments every 5 or 6 or 7 years, putting all new kitchens and updated countertops and upgrading things. That's not what we do. We'd rather deliver, you know, safe, clean apartments. And to give you an idea, our average apartment was built in 2008. Not like these are old properties, but we're focused on keeping it clean and keeping maintenance costs down, so people are happy and able to enjoy their space. It's a different way of operating that we think ultimately generates better returns to our investors, but also much better lifestyle to our residents.
This is fantastic. I love it kind of at the beginning when you talked about later in life, how you sort of connected the dots between, I don't know anybody else who moved that much. Even the military people that I know didn't live in that many places. So like that is not an easy way to grow up as a kid, moving around that much. And so, and the fact that you're now in the business of delivering stability to other families is really, those dots connecting are really so beautiful. And that's really the purpose of this podcast, is to help other people think about what are those dots in their life that maybe they can connect using their platform. So maybe you could talk a little more. I mean, I like what you said, even about I hadn't thought about the lower maintenance costs, the lower turnover, of course, of residents. That makes sense. But you also talked about your employees. How do they feel missional in this way? Does this mission that you have help attract and retain employees?
Yeah. So, there's a terrible quote about a business that says, business would be so easy if it wasn't for the people. And, that's the hard stuff, right? And so I wrote a couple books. One's called Building an Elite Organization, and one's called Building an Elite Career, which is the book I just published this past year. And those books are on how we run our companies, we run an operating system called the Elite Execution System. And it's a kind of a set of business practices, tools, structure, communication, really a way I think about how we set goals, achieve goals, and communicate as the organization grows. And at the center of all that is people. And, Howard Schultz, was quoted years ago saying, when he was asked, how does he get people at Starbucks to smile so much? And he said, well, it's simple. I hire people that like to smile. So if you want to hire really great people, and you want them to do great work and support your clients and whatnot, I want to hire great people. And the people who I want to hire are people who are going to be attracted to coming to work for a company that's got a clear purpose, clear mission, and they want to be part of a bigger calling. They want to do good in this world. Those type of people who are going to look at our company and read our story and meet our team and be attracted to the mission we're on are the type of people who are going to come here and thrive and do well and serve our clients. And we didn't create them, right? They didn't come here. And in more cases than not, not that it can't happen, but more cases than not, it's not that they, came here and all of a sudden they became generous, kind, loving people. They already had that desire. Maybe they hadn't been able to live it out in the workplace, right? And maybe it became a lot clearer to them. We spend a tremendous amount of time helping all of our employees, our team members live fully. And we think of living fully as there's 8 F's of life: faith, family, friends, freedom, fun, fulfillment, fitness, and finance. And we do a lot of work around personal development, helping people get clear, get intentional around what they want to accomplish in their life, what they want to accomplish in their family, and giving them the tools and support and resources and training and space to really focus on those areas besides just their career. And so people get a lot clearer on how they're going to go and live out the God-given blessing that they've been provided, and how, DLP in some cases can be a part of those, that their personal journey and plan and how they make an impact. And sometimes people come here and get motivated and excited and get clear, and that clarity isn't DLP's plan, and that's okay as well, right? But we have, I can say with confidence, albeit incredibly biased, I have the most engaged workforce you'll ever find. And, if I want somebody to invest money with us, I want somebody to do business with us, or I want somebody to work for us, my whole business plan, my whole approach is just introduce them to as many people who work at DLP as possible. The more people they meet, the more likely they're going to come here. We don't hide the jerks around the corner. They're all great people. And so when people spend time with our team, they're attracted because they get to work with other great, kind, loving, generous, caring, compassionate people. And it's a great joy.
Well,
Jeff, I'm going to jump in here because we're going to run out of time. But Don, tell us a little about this amazingly insane success in your career, and just a tremendous. I love, you know, the books you've written, the success you've had, the things you're doing with your family are incredible. We should put a link to the webinar that you just did on, you know, building a, I think it's called Building an Extraordinary Family.
It was, yeah.
I just listened to that, Jeff. We should put that in the show notes. But tell us about, if you're comfortable, tell us about one challenge that you saw during your career. I know you had your childhood with 37 homes, and that was definitely challenging. But you know, one challenge that you kind of worked through in your career, and then we want to wrap up with one piece of advice, you know, that you would like to give, you know, our listeners. But yeah, tell us about the challenge.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think kind of we just talked about the greatest, you know, resource in any organization, what it is for people, right? And so what I find is, you know, really every challenge I've had in life or in business always comes down to a people challenge. And so the biggest, you know, challenge I've had in my business biggest, you know, kind of headache that I've had was a people related challenge. And it really came down to everything I just said around how we have no a-holes at DLP and all great people. Well, I had a gentleman who was an a-hole, there's no other way to put it, who didn't fit our culture. Kind of that Dennis Rodman you hold the bus for. I allowed somebody like that in our organization because he was incredibly productive and really good at what he did, but he was not that person who represented our organization well. And I let that happen for, you know, a couple years. And then when I let him go, he filed a lawsuit against us, and it was a very, very costly situation, and later found out, you know, I was the third employer in a row that he did this with, but it was a very costly lesson, and the financial payment I had to make was painful and frustrating, but the bigger lesson of how much time it took, but realizing that I had made it, you know, the failure was first that I overlooked these things when I hired him. And then I overlooked this behavior for a couple of years and allowed it to negatively affect our organization. Because once you remove a cancer, you know, everything got better and the work got done and improved. And it was a complete mistake to have let him ever join the organization, but to stay for a couple of years. And so it was an expensive lesson. And I just think, you know, that's what happened in our business. In my personal life, again, everything, same thing comes to business. Right? I moved, as I said, 37 times. I have a sister who's 7 years younger than me, who lived in two households by the time she was 18 years old. And so she's my half sister and had a, from every indication, had a charmed life and parents were married, entire childhood, three siblings, you know, now four, who we've adopted a younger sister who loved her, parents who loved her, went to a great school district, yet she's now lived in 19 different rehab facilities in the last 10 years. Just got her out of a halfway house, and now for the first time ever is pregnant and having her first child, which hopefully is the gift that and the blessing that turns the corner for her to change. That's what we're praying for every day. But it shows, you know, came from, you know, similar background, obviously being my sister, but much later in life, same parents, and now, but ended up in a very different place in life than the rest of her siblings did. It's been tough. She ended up in prison 2 years ago for the summer, and think would make you hit rock bottom, and grew up in the faith just as I did, but has lived a very different life to this point. So you know, most things come down to relationships that give us our greatest joy and our greatest challenges.
A lot of times there's growth in those areas. You think about, you know, Joseph being thrown into the well and then unjustly thrown in prison, but he was being prepared and the purified for what God had planned for him. How do you feel like you were being prepared as you were going through that hardship, that valley of dealing with that employee? How do you feel like that changed you personally and your company for the better?
Well, I think, you know, first that I try to remind myself of is I've had an incredibly blessed, charmed life, and these are silly problems in the scheme of things, right? You know, my family wasn't on the verge of going bankrupt. We weren't you know, this wasn't going to affect us, even though it was a big payday, right? My organization was doing great, right? Mm-hmm. These are small, right? You and I, and I'm sure Jeff as well, you know, we've been to the poorest places in the world and, mm-hmm. and seen the pay and the real challenges that people live with and the health yep. problems and that. So dealing with an executive who was a bad actor and so forth, had to deal with these issues and frustrating. Yep. It's yeah. small problems, right? And so I just remind myself, right? The Lord doesn't give me anything I can't handle. And, mm-hmm. and I've been just so blessed. And it's easy to get lose sight of that and easy to get caught up in the why me and how did this happen to me? And I just think it just increased my conviction around knowing we're doing what we're called to do and not making excuses, not allowing ourselves to be in business with anybody. That we know doesn't have the same values as we do and won't make that mistake twice. And
that's awesome. That's awesome.
And so blessed.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we definitely need to have you back for another episode. We're just getting kind of just peeling back the first layer of the onion, but I'd love to have you as you know, it's called the Generous Business Owners Podcast. I'd love to have you give our listeners, you know, one piece of advice, somebody that's maybe earlier on the journey than you are, but I want to read a quote before I do that. This is, according to Forbes, Aristotle said this, to give away money is an easy matter and in any man's power, but to decide to whom to give it, how large and when, and for what purpose and how, is neither in every man's power nor an easy matter. Hence, it is that such excellence is rare, praiseworthy, and noble. So I know that's a lot. That's a mouthful, but even just absorbing that. But yeah, what advice you certainly have thought deeply and have been super successful in your business and have been extremely generous as someone who's listening to this podcast, you know, walking the dog, running on the treadmill. What piece of advice would you have for them?
Yeah, thank you. It's a wonderful, wonderful question. And I think, you know, we've talked about the word a few times already, but, you know, life is about, you know, intentions and I have the great pleasure of being around a lot of incredibly successful people from a financial standpoint and seeing them share their financial situation. And 98% of the time I've seen, you know, people worth $100 million, $500 million share their finances 98% of the time. They're not generous. The most common reasons, the excuses are, I don't know, you know, who to give to. I don't trust giving my money and they're going to go use the money for a private jet. It's the lack of putting intentional time and effort, into it. And they overthink it. And my encouragement is just get started, right? We had the great, Tim Tebow, we did an event with him just recently. I'm doing another one with him, which I'll be telling you guys about if you want to join me in June with Tim and his team. And, you know, he calls it as, figuring out what breaks your heart, right? And serving the people who break your heart, the problems that break your heart. And there's something that breaks all of our heart, right? And if you don't, right, then they can talk to you and go to some different places around the world and your heart's going to be broken, right? And mm-hmm. And so whether it's just going out to and doing a mission trip around the world or at the soup kitchen down the street from you or just getting involved, there's just so many. There's a plethora of incredible organizations to support people who figured out how to make a difference and just get started, do something, just get involved. And it could be $10,000. It could be a weekend of time. It could, you know, but just get started and you'll find there's nothing more enjoyable in life than giving than being generous, and a good way to that said, you know, welcome, you know, any listeners want to learn more about it. You mentioned the podcast we did or the webinar we did on building extraordinary family. We're doing a whole event on that, and there'll be a ton of us involved in hearing and seeing different ministries and philanthropy opportunities at an event we're doing in June called Building an Extraordinary Family in Pigeon Forge with content. John Maxwell is one of our keynotes, and it's going to be a really fun event for the whole family. It's invite only, but if you're not listening to the podcast, you can go on the website and learn about it. We don't charge anything for it, but it's that can be a kind of starter in getting generous, especially when you get to do it with your family, right? There's nothing cooler. Even if your goal isn't to be generous, but your goal is to build deeper relationships with your wife or your kids. And there's no better way to do that than to serve together, than to give together. Even if you want to say the reason is selfish, right, for the benefit of your own family or your marriage, there's maybe no better way to do so. So those would be a couple of my initial thoughts and on how I'd go about it.
Wow.
I love it. Well, thank you. Thanks, Jeff, for joining us today. And Don, can't thank you enough. I'm renaming you Mr. Intentionality. I gotta make some more lists of goals. So that's what I'm gonna do after this. But
DLP elite.com is a free set of tons of tools, including the tools we use to be intentional around personal life and family, my examples to my tools and some of the stuff Jeff you've seen in my Don's thoughts and stuff. We give all those resources away. There's nothing you have to do. It doesn't cost anything, but tons of the resources around it. The rhythms and tools we put in place for intentionality. Welcome anybody to download them.
Yeah, we'll put that link in the show notes.
Okay. Thank you guys. Thanks for being with us again, Don, and everybody. Thanks for joining us on this week's Generous Business Owner podcast. Go to www.generousbusinessowner.com and sign up for our newsletter and share it with some friends. And I know this will be a great blessing for everybody. Thanks again, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Generous Business Owner podcast with Jeff Thomas, Alan Barnhart, and Jeff Rutt. Make sure to follow the podcast so you don't miss an episode. You can find the guest contact information in the show notes. Stay tuned for the next episode.